fresh every Tuesday
for MSPs around the world. Around the world. This is Paul Green's MSP Marketing Podcast.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Here's what I got in store for you this week.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kevin Gazzara, and I have found a way quantitatively to identify how to keep your people, how to retain them, and it won't cost you a dime. Listen to Paul's podcast to figure out how to do that.
And on top of that fascinating interview with Kevin, we're also going to be looking at the power of deadlines to get things done.
Paul Green's MSP Marketing Podcast.
Let's talk about marketing to different verticals, such as CPAs or accountants or lawyers or veterinarians or dentists or something like that. Now, maybe you have a couple of verticals already in your MSP. Maybe you are completely vertically focused, or more likely you have a general client base, but you've got a couple of verticals. You fell into a vertical almost by accident because you picked up two lawyers. And so for you, lawyers is your vertical. Now, having a vertical is a very, very powerful thing to do for a number of reasons. Firstly, it's so much easier for you to know who the leads are. So let's say you're based in, I don't know, Los Angeles, and you want lawyers in Los Angeles. And we've all watched The Lincoln Lawyer on Netflix, right? Or we've read the book. So we know there are lots of lawyers in Los Angeles. My point is, it's a lot easier to know who they are. You can find a directory or a Google listing, or just go out there and get lists of who these people are. And so verticals make it very easy for you to know. It's a finite market. Very easy for you to know who are those people, where are they, what are their contact details. So it's easy to know who the leads are. It's a lot easier to reach them. You know, you can, because you've got their contact details, you can direct market to them, you can send them stuff in the mail, you can email them, you can reach out to them on LinkedIn. You probably know that they're going to specific events. There must be networking meetings for lawyers in Los Angeles. I bet that's an interesting meeting. But you get the idea. The most exciting thing about having a vertical is that you can make your marketing message highly relevant to them. And that's the thing that makes verticalization, to use a made-up word, verticalization is the best because it's relevant. So if I'm a lawyer in LA and I see some marketing from an MSP that says something about my legal practice in California, then that is incredibly, or it feels incredibly relevant to me. And that's the trick that we're trying to pull off with our vertical marketing. Now, the other thing to bear in mind with marketing to a vertical is that the best clients prefer to buy the highest quality. And if you can demonstrate that you understand their world and that you are relevant to them, they will perceive that you are a higher quality. So if they're looking at two MSPs, one of them just deals with any business, that's what their marketing says, and the other one just deals with lawyers in Los Angeles, they will perceive that the MSP who just deals with lawyers in Los Angeles is an expert at them and what they do, and therefore is better quality. And they're more likely to choose you. And once they've chosen you, they're more likely to pay you more as well, because when we find something we perceive is of a higher quality, we are happy to pay more for it. So relevance is a big part of this. And what I really wanted to talk about in this bit was how you need to demonstrate that in your marketing. So a lot of MSPs, their approach to verticalization is just to have a page on the website. You've got a page for lawyers, a page for dentists, a page for manufacturers, whatever. I think if you're really going to go after a vertical, it is worth you investing more, spending more time and really going for it. For example, rather than just having a page on your website, you have a whole website. And that might just be a one-page website, but it has its very specific domain. So it could be itforlawyersla.com, for example. And that's just a one-page website. And a one-page website still has navigation at the top. But what happens is when you click on, let's say, the About Us button up at the top, it kind of jumps down to a piece of anchor text further down. You get the idea. So you haven't got three, four pages, you've got just one page. But you would definitely have a website just for your vertical. You might choose to have two or three different LinkedIn profiles. You might have one that's for your general audience, and then you might have a LinkedIn profile just for your vertical. I'll let you into a secret. I have two active LinkedIns. So if you and I are connected on LinkedIn, and if we're not, just go and Google Paul Green MSP Marketing LinkedIn and you'll find me. But if we are connected on LinkedIn, that's my MSP-specific LinkedIn. Now, I started that in 2016, intending it just to be the audience of people I wanted to speak to within the channel. So it's just vendors and it's just MSPs. I do have a second LinkedIn, which you'll probably not find, but that's for my general stuff. So that's my LinkedIn I've had for like 15 years. It's just my general connections. I don't use it for marketing, if that makes sense. So I have a very vertical specific LinkedIn. It's good marketing to do that. What else would you have? You'd have your email list as well. Now, this is easy. You don't need to have a separate CRM if you've got a vertical. You, within your existing CRM, you just segment the data. So you might have lots of general email addresses, but you would then have a load of, let's say, lawyer addresses, and you just segment those within a list or a collection or by tag or however it works in your CRM. And that means that you can send an email just to the lawyers if you want to. And then you can send a separate version of that email to your general list. And of course, within your CRM, you can set up a little safety guard as well so that if you've emailed the lawyers, you exclude them from the list of the general businesses that you send. That would be a smart thing to do. Now, there are a couple of other things if you really wanted to go for the vertical that you would do. One of them is this. You would do a podcast. Doing a podcast to your vertical is super smart marketing. Because, again, it tells them that you are an expert at their world, so IT within their world. Obviously, it allows you to talk to them and broadcast a very relevant message. The other smart thing that you can do with the podcast, and I don't do this, just so you're clear, but what some MSPs do, and this is a smart thing to do, is you invite potential future clients on as guests of your podcast. So let's say you had a podcast and it was IT or technology for lawyers in LA. You would then contact some lawyers in LA and invite them to come and be guests. So you'd say to them, hey, if you're not chasing ambulances tomorrow, would you like to come and be a guest on my podcast? It's about technology for lawyers in LA. I'd love to have you on. And the reason for you connecting with them, and ideally you'd meet up and physically record it with them, the reason for doing that is not to fill up your podcast with content. It's because you then get an hour quality time with someone that could one day become a client. Do you see the smarts of that, right? So it's like an intense sales meeting dressed up as a podcast. And obviously you do put the podcast out with their interview, but they will perceive you to be a very important expert at what you do, because experts do podcasts, experts do videos, experts write, experts produce content. And, you know, if you could do, even if you did a podcast once every 2 or 3 weeks, do that for a couple of years, and not only will that in itself start to bring you business, but as I say, you can get some really good guests on there, and some of those guests will choose you because you're the smart choice. And you could do the similar kind of thing with YouTube. Now, obviously, YouTube is a little bit more, you've got to put more resources into it, because you these days, you can start just doing a YouTube video with your phone, but once you start bringing in guests, you need to mic people up properly, you need to do lighting properly, you need to do video properly. But that could be as simple as someone with a video camera filming you and a lawyer walking along a street in LA talking about technology and their life and all of that kind of stuff. And as long as you've got wireless mics and a half-decent camera, that'll be all right. And doing it outside sort of gets past all the lighting problems. But YouTube, obviously the bigger investment to those, and audio podcasts are very easy to do. Now, what's exciting, because what we're talking about here is marketing to a vertical and doing it really well. What's exciting is you can do this to multiple verticals at the same time. I actually pulled off this trick in my last business. So this was a marketing agency I started in 2005, I sold it in 2016, and we worked with three verticals. We worked with veterinarians, dentists, and opticians or optometrists. We had three websites, actually, we had nine websites. We had like a general website, we had a website, and then we had two other websites that sold a specific service. And we did that for each vertical. So we had nine websites, we had three LinkedIns, we had three Facebook groups, and we didn't do podcasts, but we were just starting to dip our toes into YouTube. And that was a lot of work, but the veterinarians didn't know about the dentists, who didn't know about the opticians. So as far as they were concerned, even though all the work was just being done by the same team, as far as they were concerned, based on our marketing, we were experts and specialists in what they did. And don't get me wrong, we knew their markets very, very well. And we did do, you know, we didn't just do the same stuff for each of them. We did some specific work for the vets and specific work for the dentists, etc. But from a marketing point of view, it seemed like we only worked with them. Right down to, we had three separate phone numbers. So our VoIP system, when they called in, it told us whether it was a veterinarian or a dentist or an optician that was calling in. So you can do this. You can have multiple verticals, but I challenge you to do more than just have a vertical page on your website, to really look at your vertical and say, right, I want to make my marketing message relevant to them. How am I going to make them feel that they are the biggest thing in my world?
Here's this week's
clever idea.
So if you're really struggling to get things done, let's talk about the power of deadlines. And when I say get things done, I don't necessarily mean getting client work done. I'm going to assume that as a business, you're organized very well around doing the client work. I mean getting the more important stuff done, which is the stuff working on the business, improving your marketing, doing some more sales. It's only when you're working on the business that you actually start to move the business forward and start to grow it. And most MSP owners that I speak to, they really struggle to do this. They struggle to get things done. So a couple of weeks ago, I took a week away on my own. So I'm a sole parent. That's just me and my beautiful child, who's 13 and a teenager, so she's beautiful but also difficult in the way that only 13-year-olds can be. But there's just me and her in the house, and it means I don't get a huge amount of time on my own to go off and be Paul and not be a parent. And a couple of weeks ago, she went away with the school. She went on like a school trip abroad. So I had the most amazing week. I just booked myself into a hotel in London, here in the UK, and I had no plans. It was amazing. I had no plans deliberately because, as you'll know yourself if you're a parent, there's always, you've got to be somewhere on time, you're always being a taxi driver, there's always getting food ready, there's always routine and things. And I wanted to enjoy being an adult and being a human and not have routines. And I just walk, I love walking. I walked like 50 miles that week, and I just ate and had a few beers and went to a casino. I don't gamble, I like watching other people gamble, etc., etc. And what was really interesting was leading up to that week. So in the week when I was working, leading up to when I knew I'd have that vacation, that holiday, that week off, I got like 5 times more stuff done in that week. And you will have had exactly the same thing when you're going on some kind of vacation. And maybe you've never really looked back at that and thought about the superpower of that. Why do you get more done the week before a vacation? It's simply because of deadlines. Because you know the following week you're going to be wherever you are and you don't want to be doing any work. No one wants to be that person sat at the airport, you know, at the gate when they're calling your name, where you're sat there typing furiously on your laptop to try and get something done, to get it finished before you go on vacation, right? No one wants to be that person. So what happens is the week before, when we have this immovable deadline, is we just work to a greater capacity. We do more things, we do them faster, we're more organized, we know what we need to do, and we become better at saying no. So when someone wants to have a chat, we say, no, I'm sorry, that's not core focus to me, it's not something I need to get done this week. This is the power of deadlines. Now, since coming back from that holiday, I've been asking myself, how can I introduce artificial deadlines? Because you can pretend to work as if you were going on holiday next week, but the reality is you're not, right? So your brain kind of knows that's not real, so you don't work at the same kind of frenetic pace. You're not the same kind of no person. You're not as organized. So how can you introduce those deadlines into a regular working week? Well, I've got some ideas, and they're things that I'm gonna try out. So the first of them is to base your work around events that cannot be moved. So for example, let's say your kids have a sports day, right? And let's say you need to be at school at, I don't know, 10 a.m. for sports day, and you're going to be there for 4 hours, so there'll be nothing happening. And it's a really core value to you to be a parent and be there at sports day. And for your kids, when they look up to see that you're watching them lose their race, and you're not on your phone, you know, talking to someone from the office or whatsoever. So that's a really good example. And certainly where you want your kids to see you, and you want your kids to see that you're engaged, even though actually we're bored. That's a secret that all kids never know. We're bored at their sports day or their theatre show, right? Some of the time. But that thing, that morning, that's an immovable deadline. That would be a good way. I appreciate that doesn't come up very often, that kind of thing. Unless, I guess, if you have a regular sports club or a sports... Like, my child does lots of acting schools and drama clubs, so sometimes I have to just kind of sit there and watch them do a performance, and that can be a good deadline for me. Here's something you could do 2-3 times a week. Take a train journey, right? So I live about 40 minutes from London. So I live in the UK, just outside a city called Milton Keynes. It's about 40 minutes on the train to London. And I figured out that in that 40 minutes, so long as I can get on the Wi-Fi, I can get a ton of work done. And again, I work to a frenzy. I'm not looking at my emails or my WhatsApps. I'm getting things done because I want to have it done before I get off the train, because that's an interruption. And then obviously also then waiting for a train. So if I know, let's say I've got to pick up my child at 4 in the afternoon, which means I've got to get on a train at 3 in London. So I might be sitting there at 2:30 in the train station, furiously typing on my laptop, doing work, because I know I've got an immovable deadline if I cannot miss that train. It has occurred to me, and I might try this next week, what if I was to go to London just to be productive? So I get onto the train to give me a short journey to be productive. I'm then in London for a couple of hours, again with that deadline, and then I've obviously got another train journey back to be productive. I'll try that out and I'll let you know how that goes. Another idea is you could sort yourself out a deadline based around fun. So let's say you were going to the cinema, and that's going to happen at 3 p.m. today, because it is cool going to the cinema during a working day. I don't do it very often, but it's a fun thing to do. So you know at 3 p.m. you're going to the cinema. That's when the film starts at 3 p.m. It's an immovable deadline. And actually, because it's something fun, just like a vacation or a holiday, it's something you're not going to want to interrupt. In fact, as I'm doing that, I'm thinking you've got even more things on a day-to-day thing that you could do, like parking. Like if you go and park somewhere and you have to buy a parking ticket, and there's only, let's say, 90 minutes or 2 hours on that parking ticket, it's a deadline, isn't it? As you look around you on a daily basis, you can start to see deadlines. And these are not artificial deadlines, they're real deadlines that have consequences. If you're late back to your car, you get a parking ticket. If you're late to the cinema, you miss the start of the film. If you miss the train journey, you don't pick up your kids from school and they hate you. All of these things are real deadlines that are really important to you. And actually, getting up to that deadline, you can be so much more efficient. I'm going to try some of this out over the next few weeks. I'd love to hear from you if you do the same.
Paul's blatant plug. Blatant
plug. It's funny. We spend a lot of time in this podcast talking about improving your marketing and how to win new clients. And sometimes it's easy to lose track of why we're trying to do that. It all comes down to improving your life. I'm assuming that you're the owner of the business. If your business is bigger, with more resources, more clients, more cash coming in and more cash generated as profit, that changes your life. You know, the goal of being a business owner is not to work 60-hour weeks, sweating yourself into an early grave in order that people will just forget you. That's not the point of the business at all. The point of the business is to give you a great life. And don't get me wrong, you've got to look after the clients. You've got to look after your staff. All of that's important. Quality is really important if you want a long-term business. But the ultimate goal of this is to give you plenty of time and plenty of cash to do the things that are important to you, like going to your kids' sports days, like going on bigger and better vacations with your family. And this is why we put together the MSP Marketing Edge, because we work with you, assuming that you're not very good at marketing, we work with you to help you do all the marketing that you need to do. We give you a ton of marketing content, we give you a very, very simple plan to follow. But we're not just there to help you do marketing. We understand there is that context that if you improve the business through marketing, you improve your life. And you improve your life, you improve your other half's life, you improve your kids' life, you improve your staff's life. That's what we're really in the business of doing here. Now, we only work with one MSP per area. So the first thing for you to do is check to see if your area is available. You can do this at MSPMarketingEdge.com.
The big
interview. Hi, I'm Dr. Kevin Gazzara, and I am the founder of Magna Leadership Solutions.
And thank you so much for joining us on this podcast, Kevin. You won your place on this show by saying to me you have a way to improve staff retention and for us to have happier staff. And I'm not sure how familiar you are with the MSP employment market right now, but it is so difficult and so expensive to find really good people. Recruitment is a nightmare for most MSPs. And the only nightmare that's bigger than recruitment is when a trusted member of your team comes to you and says, I'm really sorry, but I've decided to leave and I'm going over to XYZ MSP or moving on to something different, whether that's for more money or whether it's for other reasons. So anything that we can do to improve the retention of our staff is very, very welcome. So you and I are going to talk about that in just a minute or so's time. Let's first of all just go back a little bit and learn about you. So tell us what your backstory is, Kevin. What have you done with your career? What is it that gives you the right to be on a podcast like this talking about how to retain your staff better?
All right. Well, thanks, Paul, for having me on the podcast. And here's my quick backstory. Born and raised in Pennsylvania area in Philadelphia, did my undergrad in engineering and business, MBA, and then I went off and did all my doctoral work in organizational leadership and management. And during that time, I did all my doctoral research and my dissertation on creating and understanding to see if there was a correlation with task types for motivation, engagement, and productivity, and getting people in flow. And what I found is, yes, there is. And that's what we're gonna talk about today. So I spent 30 years in corporate world, retired in 2007, started up my own firm, Magna Leadership Solutions. We've been helping small organizations develop their leaders either through coaching or through our Leading Forward Academy. For the last 17 years. Every year has been better than the last. Life is great, and I'm so glad to be able to help individuals. And we work a lot with IT organizations as well.
Yeah, no, that's great to hear. And it's I'm not surprised that you've had 17 great years in a row, and I'm sure 2024 will be no different for you because you're clearly someone that gives a lot back. So talk to us then about what your findings were. And by the sound of it, you know, that doctoral work was some time ago, but then you had 30 years in that corporate environment and your 17 years consulting to really hone down into what is it that keeps people staying with us, or what is it that drives them out to new employers or new opportunities?
Well, first of all, there's lots and lots of things that keep people in their jobs. And the key is to create a motivating environment. A lot of HR people will tell you, you need to go out and you motivate individuals. And you really can't motivate people. What you can do is you can create a motivating environment, right? And the key is to tailor the environment to them. And since we work with a lot of IT organizations, a lot of them like to work individually, right? They're not overly people, so you have to create that environment where they can go off and do the heavy-duty work. And at the same time, you don't want to forget them to make sure that they feel part of the team. So I think the biggest thing, Paul, that we found is that people don't do a great job of hiring the right people, right? That they hire people generally for skill, and they really should be hiring for talent. And if you look at the number one reason people leave is people leave usually because of managers, right? It's not because, you know, they're going to get another $5,000 or whatever. But they feel like the environment that they're at doesn't meet their kind of autonomy, mastery, or purpose, as Daniel Pink talks about in his book, In Drive. And if you can create that environment for them, when they get a better offer, a financial offer, they're more likely to stay. But it starts with hiring the right people. You know, you want to hire for talent, train for skill. And the biggest reason I'd say people leave in addition to the manager is that they just don't fit with the team. And the good news is there's lots and lots of assessments. We use a lot of different assessments for this to try to figure out, are they going to be a good fit? And so that's kind of the foundational types of things. Pay attention to your people. We find that communicating with them on a more frequent basis is better than a large communication like meeting once a month. If you can meet with them in small intervals, It really shows that you're interested. And we encourage all the people that I do executive coaching for is take an interest in the individual as well. You know, even though you say leave, you know, all your baggage at home, you know, people bring that into the office, and particularly now in a virtual environment, it's more prevalent. So if you can pay attention, find out what their interests are, show an interest, figure out how it relates to your work, they're going to really think hard before they make that jump.
Yeah. So nothing you've said there is particularly rocket science, is it, really?
No.
If you look at it,
it's not about
you know, getting the right people in, making them feel comfortable, showing an interest in them so that they become part of something. They're not just working for you, but they actually belong. So even though it's not rocket science, many, many, many business owners, you know, even people with just 2 or 3 staff, let alone when you start getting up to sort of 20, 30 or more, they really struggle with this kind of stuff. So why? Why do we struggle?
I think it's really quite simple. I think if you look at most organizations, particularly today, is that they're under-resourced, right? Particularly smaller organizations never say no, and they keep adding stuff to their plates, right? And what they don't realize is we had something when I spent 18 years or 17 years at Intel, and right before I left, I wanted to make sure that I could, you know, go and help other organizations that didn't have $10 million budgets when I was managing Intel's management leadership development for the world. And I think one of the things that we found is that people really don't have a great understanding of what we used to call keeping the business running, right? That we keep adding additional projects and things, right? And people want to be good team players, and employees want to be good team players. But as managers, we do a really terrible job. That's what we've seen. They do a terrible job of really allocating sufficient amount of time and resources for the individuals to do a good job. And then you end up with people working 80-hour weeks and, you know, on the weekends and the evenings, and it destroys their family life. And they want to be good. They're doing it with good intent. But most people have not figured out, you know, what's your normal day, you know, your normal week. What does it take out of that 40 or 50 hours that you're working to really just keep the business running? And then if you look at that and you do an inventory, that's one of the first things that we do is, you know, when we're looking at doing the task rebalance that we'll talk about, I'm sure, in a little bit, is identify, you know, where all your time is going, your resources going, what's important, what isn't important, being able to get rid of the stuff or delegate the stuff that is really, you know, you shouldn't be doing. You know, if you're making $120,000 as an IT administrator or whatever the number is, if you're doing lots and lots of administrative work that could be outsourced, that's usually a really good kind of low-hanging fruit of things that you could do. So once you figure out how much time you have, and I would encourage all the small business owners to have their people do an inventory. We have a process, and anybody who wants to contact me at the end, you know, I'll be glad to send the process to them to be able to do that. Then you'll get an idea of how much more work you can take. And I'd say that's probably the number one reason that people are leaving is just because you get that slow scope creep, and eventually it gets too much. And like I said, people want to be good team players, so they don't want to say no. And it usually gets overwhelming, and the best way to, or the easiest way for people, particularly since most people are non-confrontational, to be able to address it is just to pull the plug and move on and start over.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And thank you for that offer. We will share your contact details at the end of this interview. But that's something really, really interesting. It's never occurred to me. And I've owned a business since 2005. That was when I started my first one. It's never occurred to me to actually stop and create a baseline level of how many hours does it take me, does it take each member of my team just to keep the business running? Because I'm sure, like most MSPs listening to this, like yourself, Kevin, you know, we've got projects on. We've always got a project, right? There's always something that we're doing to develop or improve or grow or, you know, close something down or try something new. And yeah, I think that's something maybe my team and I might go and do in the next week or so, is figure out where's the baseline. Now, you mentioned a specific process there. I think it was task rebalancing, I think you mentioned. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so As I mentioned, Paul, earlier, just previously, is that, you know, there's lots and lots of ways to keep people motivated and engaged, right? So I had created, as a part of my doctoral dissertation, you know, when I was doing all my research, I noticed that, you know, each one of us does different tasks. And the way it turned out was I was managing at Intel, because I did my doctorate around in 2000. So I was still working at Intel and finishing all my doctoral work while I was still working there. And one of the things I found is, as I was managing my team, I had a team of about 20. One of the things I noticed was, you know, they were all very similar personalities, almost had the same, they had master's degrees in, usually in HR or business, all about the same age or so and same experience. And what I noticed was, you know, I'd walk into the first person's office to check in and see how they were doing. And I would notice they would say, hey, you know, I love working on task A, but I don't like B and C as much. Okay. All right. And then I would walk into the second office, same kind of person. And they'd say, hey, I like working on B, but I don't like A and C. And third person would be as, I like working on C, but I don't like A and B. And I thought, you know, this is really kind of perplexing for me. It's like, why is that? You know, we've tried to align them with the work that they would love to do, and there's these different preferences. So I did some research, worked with a gentleman by the name of Bill Daniels. He wrote a great book. If anybody wants to read a fantastic book called Breakthrough Performance, Bill's a behavioral psychologist. And what Bill noticed was that each one of us has, that we do three types of tasks on a daily basis, so on a regular basis. We do routine tasks, and as you can imagine, like a routine task might be, you know, doing email or, you know, deleting, you know, 10 spam messages or, you know, getting 10 checkoffs done on, you know, to call people or whatever it is. So routine work is highly predictable and at the same time really needs to get done in the moment, right? So that's a routine work. The second task type is what Bill calls is problem solving or troubleshooting. He calls it troubleshooting. And that type of task is highly unpredictable and has to get done in the moment. So, you know, you get a client call, the server's down, you know, the code's not working, my web page is going all funky with characters, right? You have to do it in the moment. So that's the troubleshooting or the problem solving type of task. And then the third type of task that we do is what Bill calls project tasks, right? These are highly predictable and they don't have to get done in the moment. So it's like working on your taxes or finishing a new design or whatever. And what we found was that if you look at those three tasks as a pie, you know, which equals 100%, there are 496 discrete mixtures of tasks that people have that they like to do. And what we found, or what I found through my doctoral research, was that each one of us has a preference of a balance of one of those 496 different variations. And if I can identify that variation for your ideal task balance, I've proven statistically that I can raise your level of job satisfaction, motivation, and engagement. There's some additional work that was done by Dr. Holly Martin for her dissertation, where she took my dissertation, and she found out that you can actually expand empowerment, where you feel empowered once you start doing this or even being aware of that. So the idea is find the mixture and then create the job structure to be able for you to get that mixture. So as an example, for me, you know, at a very high level, I'll just round the numbers off, is I like 50% project work. I like 30% problem solving work. And I have about a 20% tolerance for routine work. So what I do each day, and this is the thing that we do for organizations. In fact, we did this for a big IT organization. And there's actually a case study that I'm sure I can give you the link at the end of this session, is once you know that, you can start structuring your day. So I found that I have a certain cadence, and we all have a different cadence. For once we know the splits, you want to figure out what your cadence is. So for my cadence, for project work, it's about 2 hours. And for troubleshooting is about an hour and a half or so. Routine work, typically half hour to 45 minutes. So what I try to do each day is I try to schedule my day so that I block my time and I vary the task type that I do rather than just going from project to project to project where there's a variety of different things I'm working on. But what our brain wants is our brain wants that feedback of that we're accomplishing things at different levels. You know, when you finish a project piece, then it's a very high intensity of feedback, but the frequency is much, much lower. Troubleshooting is about a medium piece of feedback, as well as it happens a little bit more than project work. And of course, routine work, it has a lower impact of the feedback, but it's much, much more frequent. And each one of us has a different frequency that we need in order to kind of stay motivated and engaged. Yeah. And what I'll tell the listeners here is the way you can tell. So once you know your mix, so you've got that project mix, like for me, it's about 50 and I can do 2 hours in a row, is the way you can tell that you need to do a different task type is when you start thinking about other things. You're not in that flow and you're not in that zone where you want to get up, you want to get a drink, you want to go pick up the phone and make a phone call, or you want to go answer some emails. That's the trigger. And the trigger says, I need to switch my task type. So if I move from a project, then net what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to the email and I'm going to read, you know, 24 emails and I'm going to delete half of them. And I'm going to feel like, oh, I have accomplished something. And after I've kind of done that for a while, when I start thinking about, I should probably work on this or make that phone call, that's the trigger. And then from there, you want to jump into a different task type, either whether it's project or troubleshooting. And if you can manage that and you have that ability to schedule, block your time to be able to do that, at the end of the day, you're going to be tired, but you're not going to be exhausted. You're not going to be mentally exhausted. And you'll want to come back and do it again. Now, this process that I developed for the doctoral work, I call the task quotient, or TQ, right? And there's an assessment, once again, that we'll give to the listeners at the end, so they don't have to buy it. Normally, we charge for this. I'm going to give your listeners a gift of that at the end.
Okay. Well, we are at the end. We are there already, and I'm so glad. My final question to you is going to be the practical question of how do we figure out which of these 496 different types we are, and you've given that answer there, which is essentially it's to listen to yourself. So I will just throw in one practical question before we go to some of those links, and thank you very much for your very kind offer, Kevin.
Sure.
From a practical tracking point of view, you know, should you journal throughout the day? Should you do time tracking? Because we all have moments during the day, don't we, where we are distracted. For me, it's going on social media. I know if I'm sitting down to do something and then I'm like, oh, just check Facebook on my phone, it's a massive red flag, because I don't like Facebook, right? So it's a massive red flag for me that I'm trying to find anything to do. And in fact, actually, since working from home, if I find myself thinking, I might just go and empty the dishwasher, that's also another red flag. It means I'm distracting myself from the thing that I don't really want to do. So from a practical point of view, how do you think the average person, not just the business owner, but their team, how can they figure out what their mix is?
Well, the first thing is take the assessment that'll tell you what your mix is of the 496 different mixes that there are. We have a tracking sheet that we give to all of our execs or the people that go through our programs and say, here, just track the things that you're doing. You want to track it in, you know, if you can track it in 15 to 30 minute increments, great. Certainly at each hour, just kind of writing down what you do. That'll give you an idea. And then the process once you get your task quotient to identify what are the project, routine, and troubleshooting tasks, then you can just do a quick inventory of what you got. And then I think you'd be incredibly surprised with two things. One, that you're doing a lot more of, usually execs are doing a lot more administrative work than they should be. And two, that you're getting a lot less of what you need to stay motivated and engaged. And then we have a whole other process of how do you fix that?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Okay, we've got to the point of the giveaways, and you've made a very generous offer. In fact, let me sound the giveaway horn. So thank you for this. Make it nice and easy for us, Kevin, because we can always stick really complicated links on our show page, which is on the website. Tell us where to go and get these amazing things that you've said you give away. And also, how can we best get in touch with you?
So I created a bit.ly link, so it's a short link. If anyone goes to Magna Leader, magnaleader.co/ and in all caps, gift, G-I-F-T, it'll take you right to our site for you to be able to take the assessment. And it takes about less than 5 minutes to take answer the 15 questions. You'll get your report instantaneously, and it will identify your ideal mixture of how to stay motivated and engaged. If you want to get in touch with me, kevin@magnaleadership.com. Send me an email. I'd love to talk about this. I can send you templates or walk you through things or give you insight on your report. Be glad to do that. And my promise to anybody that calls is absolutely no sales pitch. You're not going to get a sales pitch from me. We have plenty of clients. I want to be helpful to you. And if I can do that, then I'm kind of fulfilling my kind of role in life.
Paul Green's MSP Marketing Podcast. This week's recommended book.
Hi, I'm Trevor W. Goodchild, Facebook Ad Policy Specialist, and I recommend Built to Sell by John Warillo because it gives you a really good insight, not only into how to build your business to sell, but also what are some good checks and balances to make sure that your business is operating sustainably for years to come.
Coming up next week.
We've got a special episode for you next week. MSP owner Lyle Kirschenbaum is doing a big trade show. Now, he did the same trade show last year. It was pretty good results. This year, he wants more. So he's got a bigger booth, and he wants to really 10x his return. So in our special next week, we are going to delve into what he's doing and how to get better returns from it. If you've ever wondered if trade shows are a good way for you to grow your business, we will answer that question next week. Join me next Tuesday and have a very profitable week in your MSP.
Made in the UK.
For MSPs around the world.
Paul Green's
MSP Marketing Podcast.